This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
I'm Alan Sepinwall. I'm the chief TV critic for Rolling Stone, which is a fancy way of saying that I watch TV for a living. But there's so many TV shows being made now that even I can't watch all the ones I want to. But what if you didn't have to binge an entire series? What if you just looked at the very first episode of a show you'd never seen, and then the very last? Would you feel like you'd gotten the complete experience, or would you be completely lost at the end? Well, there's only one way to find out. Welcome to a new episode of Too Long, Didn't Watch. Now, ordinarily, we have one fantastic guest on to try a show they've never seen before, but today, we've got something special. We have two for the price of one. They're the co-authors of the New York Times bestseller, The Greatest Love Story Ever Told, co-hosts of the podcast In Bed with Nick and Megan, and in every possible way, the first couple of prime time. You might know her best as Karen Walker from Will and Grace, and you might know him best as Ron Swanson from Parks and Recreation. But together, they are Megan Mullally and Nick Offerman. Thank you so much for coming on, guys.
Thanks, Alan.
Thanks for having us.
It's so fun.
What have you guys been watching since this quarantine started?
Oh, gosh. We're like midway into about five different shows right now, but one show that we really attacked wholeheartedly was this reality show called Alone. We watched six seasons of it.
Six seasons? Wow. Yeah.
That was really like good. The first thing we did. That was our quarantine, like, okay, well, if they can do that, then we can do this. Because it's kind of like Naked and Afraid, except they're not naked and they're alone. So we powered through that like there was no tomorrow.
Yeah, it was quite enjoyable. I mean, we found a show where people were even more
cut off
and like really losing their shit.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, we can go down and get something out of the fridge and we can also hug each other. So
yeah,
this isn't so bad.
My wife and I, there's a few shows we watch together, including both of yours, but mostly the stuff I like is not something that she wants to watch and vice versa. Do you guys share similar taste in TV or not?
I guess our TV watching time is so valuable that it's extremely rare anymore that we watch anything without one another.
Mm-hmm. I mean, well, now it's not quite as valuable as it was a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
It's a little cheaper now. But yeah, we seem to really love all the same shows and sort of not love the same shows, which is good, I think. Nick calls me the entertainment director of the household because, like, I'm looking at my TV list right now. Like, every time I hear that something's good or I read about it, I put it on my list. It's a little crazy.
Has there been, like, a show where one of you strongly liked it and one of you strongly disliked it?
Something that springs to mind is, like, Game of Thrones. Partly for me, I want to wait until the books fade in my memory. Because if I watch the show right away, I think it'll suffer because the book's always better than the movie, but especially if I wait, let the books fade so that I'm not nitpicking, oh, I can't believe they changed that, or oh my God, you know, whereas Brynn of Tarth didn't have a belt, you know, or whatever. And so there's only little nerdy things like that, but I'd rather hang out with Megan and watch something we both like. So, like in the case of Watchmen, we just let it go.
And I feel like we might go back and watch Watchmen because we keep hearing how amazing it is and it gets incredible. And we love The Leftovers in a way that could only be described as obsessive. So I just feel like we'll probably watch it eventually.
I've got a Leftovers poster just to my left on my office wall. And
amazing.
I can say if you stick with it, Watchmen will give you some of the same feelings
after a while. Good. Okay, good great. trust your judgment completely.
All right, so what show are we here to watch today, guys?
My So-Called Life.
Yeah.
From 1994, it turns out.
1994. Was there a reason either of you didn't watch the show either back then or in the year since then?
I think I watched it a little bit, but I was in New York doing a show at that time. And so I feel like I just, you know, never saw primetime television because I was on stage or something.
I was in Chicago. I didn't have a television. I missed shows like Friends and Seinfeld. I didn't see those shows. Like I was so buried in the theater scene 24/7. I was just such a obsessed theater freak.
So before you got the invitation to do this, what did you know about it? What did you think it was about?
I guess as an actor, you always kind of have an awareness of what's going on in the business, as it were. And I knew in my head, I knew to associate it with 30-something. It had like a cult or underground love that it was considered like a cutting-edge, fresh, cool, new kind of TV show when it hit the airwaves.
And I knew it was about a teenage girl. We have a friend who I think discovered her. How old was she when she did this show?
Claire Danes, when she shot the pilot that we're about to watch, she was 13 years old.
Okay, yes. Wait, so that must have been what Linda said. That's amazing.
All right, so here's what I can tell you before we watch. My So-Called Life, it ran for a mere 19 episodes on ABC in 1994 and 95. It's on the short list of the best one-season TV shows ever made, and is so far, by far, the shortest show we've done on this podcast. It's a teen drama. It was created by Winnie Holtzman and produced, indeed, by the 30-something guys, Marshall Herskowitz and Ed Zwick. It was a show at least a few years ahead of its time, but one that kicked off the acting careers of a lot of gifted young performers, including a future Emmy winner and a future Oscar winner. So, you guys ready to go back to the days of flannel and grunge to see what all the fuss was about?
Can't wait.
By God.
Let's do it.
There's something different.
I would never dye my hair red.
It's not red. It's crimson glow.
Oh. Well, I could see it now.
The original insouciant parent.
Axl Rose.
My dad thinks every person in the world is having more fun than him.
Can't believe she's 13.
I can't believe, and she's
so good.
Because
she's known now for her composure and being such a badass adult.
I just like how he's always leaning against stuff.
I think
is
that's
it okay
the
if I love
bit.
Jordan Catalano?
I'd love crazy about Jordan Catalano. Yeah. The way he leans on shit.
Well, you have to come to Tino's tomorrow night.
And once you see Jared Leto, he has the undeniable bone structure.
It's crazy.
In a line
that's
of
Jared Leto,
heartthrobs.
Yeah.
Like it's Rob Lowe remade.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, that's there he is.
Yeah. For her being 13, I don't know how they're supposed to be in the show, but they really do a lot of stuff that I didn't do when I was 13.
Oh, totally. They're pounding, like, some sort of heavy brown liquor in this parking lot.
Yeah.
You are so beautiful. It hurts to look at you.
I thought that was sort of a common expression, but maybe it was coined on My So-Called Life, on the pilot of My So-Called Life.
When it hurts.
It's really kind of like crazy, that. Really. It's crazy that she even got cast, because I don't think people really, that wasn't what was expected.
Yeah, it speaks very well of the creators.
Well, now it's sort of the new wave of actors.
Somebody looked at this and said, man, we get her next to Mandy Patinkin. We can back up the money truck to the bank.
That was My So-Called Life. First of all, in a larger sense, what'd you guys think?
Well, I mean, it was pretty groundbreaking for its time. I mean, it's funny because it's a one-season show, and yet people still refer to it. So it definitely made an impression. I'm wondering why it was only one season. I'm sure you know. And just the way it's shot, the lighting, the sort of muted, like, kind of earth tone, pastel-y, like all those colors are so interesting. There wasn't anything like it, I don't think.
I feel like because I had a big gap in my own cultural education, I didn't see much TV at all, kind of until I met Megan and was like, oh, I got to check out this Will and Grace. And that's, I mean, that's actually not an exaggeration.
Yeah,
I didn't have a TV.
It.
If I had seen this, you know, as a high schooler, I think it would have been forward thinking, you know, very woke in my small town household. So I appreciate that, even though, you know, looking back from this point of view, it's like, oh man, this is really clunky in a lot of ways.
Definitely. All right. Yeah. So now for the benefit of the people who did not just spend 45 minutes watching the My So-Called Life pilot, how would you sum up what happened? What went down there?
What's the recap? She lives, you know, obviously at home with her parents and her, what does she have?
Her little sister.
Oh yeah, her little sister. And she's rebellious. She's
kind of newly rebellious. Like she's coming out of a shell.
She's dyed her hair kind of red, but it's like an auburn. It actually looks fantastic.
Yeah, crimson.
It doesn't look weird
blush.
At all. Yeah. You know, her parents are kind of freaked out and they don't know what to make of it. And then she's sort of lying about saying she's going to go spend the night with a friend, but she's actually going out to party with a bunch of friends.
We're seeing this this lovely teen, like pubescent caterpillar trying to become a butterfly.
She's got a huge crush on this cute guy who's completely out of her league, or so she thinks, named Jordan Catalano.
And apparently just a stone-cold idiot.
he really, it's such a funny character.
But yeah, like, she's navigating...
lost in his own deep thoughts all the time.
She's navigating her sexuality, and that, like, that brings into question old friendships and new relationships sort of butting heads. It's the story of a young girl finding herself.
Yeah, and the girl who was her best friend probably from childhood up until recently.
When they were squares.
Yeah. She's now kind of let her fall by the wayside in favor of a cooler, wilder girl. And the poor girl who got dumped is perplexed and hurt.
We've run through. We got Angela, the main character. We've got her mom and dad, Patty and Graham, little sister Danielle, Jordan Catalano.
And her boyfriend with the curly hair, Brian.
Yeah, Brian Krakow, who lives next door or across the street.
Yes, aspiring boyfriend, but she doesn't want him.
Sharon Chersky, the ex-best friend. Rayanne Graff, the new best friend. And Ricky Vasquez.
Oh, yeah, Ricky. He's the bisexual friend from her school that she hangs out with, along with her wild girlfriend. Ricky seems really cool, though. Like, I don't know, even Rayanne, they don't seem horrible. It's not like she's not a mean girl or anything. She's just wild. Right?
Yeah.
And Ricky seems cute.
And Ricky was definitely kind of a character way ahead of his time in 1994. To have like a queer kid in a high school show and hanging out in the girls' room with his female friends, that was something you just did not expect to see on any form of television then.
I was so surprised because we started Will and Grace in 1998, and the popular, you know, school of thought was that those were the first gay characters on television since Billy Crystal and Soap. Not true.
Yeah. Now, did you find yourselves like empathizing with Angela, or did you find her sort of an exasperating teenager saying a lot of dumb things?
No, I like her. I mean,
yeah,
part of it is just because Claire Danes is so good in it. You know, you can't not like her.
Anything that might be annoying about her, I also am guilty of. Like, I absolutely was the teenager that would show up with dyed hair or whatever and be like, what's up, you guys? This, you know, this is the new cool me.
He still does that.
Because I remember I tried showing this to my own teenage daughter a few months back, and we got to the Anne Frank scene where she says that Anne Frank was lucky because she got to be locked in an attic with the boy she liked for months.
Yeah,
and my daughter's like, all right, so we're supposed to hate her, right?
Yeah, that whole line of reasoning is rough. And also there's some crazy stuff, like toward the beginning, she's doing a voiceover about her mom, and she says, I can't really look at her without fantasizing about stabbing her repeatedly. And I was like, oh, God, no. No. Nope. Thank you.
Well, I imagine, you know, I remember looking this up a while ago. There were basically two actors who read for the part. Claire Danes was one. She was 13. Alicia Silverstone was, I believe, 16. And they decided ultimately she was a little bit too glamorous to play the character.
Yeah, that's interesting. And people would, because that was after she
It was right
already
before
well
she
now.
Did Clueless, oh, but after, right I think, the Aerosmith videos.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. People might have associations or something. It's cool that it was somebody unknown.
So like you were saying when we were watching one of those scenes, like you can't imagine being able to do that at 13. Were either of you even acting at that age, like in school productions or anything?
No, I had done one musical in summer stock when I was 12. I'd played Sprinza in Fiddler on the Roof. She's one of the two daughters that no one's ever heard of. There are five. You always think there are three, but nope, there's Sprinza and Bielka.
Yeah, they get to go to America with Tevye and his
wife. Yes, we're going on a train and a boat. That was one of my lines. That was the extent of my career at that point.
Your question brings to mind when I did the movie Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl, which is this great independent film. These three, like, 19-year-olds at the time that were so good. I'd be staring at them slack-jawed and suddenly it would be like, oh, shit, sorry, it's my line. That's sort of my answer to the question is I think I was into my mid-20s before I really got a handle on that kind of naturalism. And I have a lifelong vendetta against those three teenagers.
Angela's sort of balancing a lot of different complicated relationships. She's fighting with her parents. She has largely abandoned Sharon, her old friend, to hang out with Rayanne and Ricky. She's got this crush on Jordan Catalano, and she's also trying to avoid the crush that Brian obviously has on her. Which of those different sort of relationships did you find the most compelling?
The one I always find the least compelling is the trope of the lovelorn.
The heartbreaker.
Crush on the foxiest member of the opposite sex, you know, the romantically leaning Jordan Catalano.
Yeah, just because you kind of know that eventually he's going to come around.
Right.
I mean, traditionally, that's what happens.
Or is it some kind of wonderful where you sort of see past eventually, in this version, she'd see past Jordan Catalano to Brian Krakow and say, oh my God, I love you. You were there right in front of me the whole time.
I thought the girlfriend thing was interesting just because Rayanne doesn't seem overtly horrible. Or does she? Or did I miss something?
No, she seems troubled. Like she's... Yeah. Yeah. She's the one who like gets into it with that guy.
Yeah.
Is pounding like hard liquor.
Peer pressure.
Which, by the way, let me pause for 1 second. This is what I have to bring to the table. Rayanne, when they're in the parking lot of the club, and she's got some bottle of like slow gin or something, and she and Claire Danes both take a hit on it. In the case of the teenagers on this show, they clearly are not realistically drinking. They're just like slamming the bottle. And so this is just a general announcement to actors, and that is, have liquid in your cup. Take the time to consume it believably.
Mm-hmm. I think we have another announcement to actors, though, which is when it's an eating scene, you got to eat. You can't just push it around on the plate. It doesn't matter if you're talking with your mouth full. People do that in real life.
We've noticed this a couple times, very like in the last week, and it came back up for me this morning. We were both in our bathroom. We each have our own sink because we're hot shots.
Oh, the toothbrush.
And we're brushing our teeth. We're literally this morning brushing our teeth, having a conversation. And twice recently, there have been scenes between couples brushing their teeth.
Dry toothbrush. That's
with
the new
no
thing.
Toothpaste. Yeah. They're just showing a toothbrush. They're like, I've got my toothbrush.
And they're holding it, but they're not brushing their teeth, and there's no toothpaste. So that's another thing that can't happen again.
Yeah, keep it real.
Yeah.
We have to keep each other held.
Keep them honest.
To a higher standard. Right.
So where would you guess the story of My So-Called Life goes from here between now and the finale we're about to watch?
Oh, my gosh. I think she's definitely made a lot of headway with Jordan Catalano. I think that maybe she's really questioning whether or not Rayanne was the perfect choice, and maybe the first friend, Sharon, might have been the best one all along. And I think that something happened, and maybe like Brian is starting to look a little better to her, the friend from her neighborhood with the curly hair.
I just remembered something, though, that we just saw a glimpse of at the end of the pilot. That is when she was coming home. After the cop drops her off, she sees her dad with some other woman.
Oh, he
had said he was going to be out.
Ooh, divorce or separation? Is she faced with the choice of having to like tell on him or something?
What if dad hooks up with Ricky? Because remember, he was like, He's bisexual.
What?
He
no.
wears eyeliner.
He's not hooking up with Ricky. That's like way too much for night. I don't think. I mean, that's way too much for 1994. So maybe something's happening with their marriage. Like maybe she's put in a weird position where she knows something that her mom doesn't know.
Yeah, she.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that scene where she catches Graham talking to the other woman when they play Everybody Hurts, like that was a big deal in 1994 to play that REM track right then.
That song kicks in. You're like, oh, shit. Yeah. They got REM money.
Well, this was the broadcast networks in the 90s, you know, when this was a show that failed in 19 episodes. And I'm sure every one of its ratings like dwarfed anything that Parks and Rec did on its best day.
Oh, hell yeah. God, it's so crazy. So do you have any idea why it didn't continue on?
Well, there's a couple things. One, there was some sense that Claire Danes kind of wanted to do some other things. Executives at ABC just kind of didn't know what to do with it. It aired on Thursdays opposite, you know, Friends. And the audience was primarily teenage girls, which was not a demo that necessarily a big three broadcast network was chasing back then. And it took a couple of years for like the WB to start doing things like Buffy and Dawson's Creek and Felicity that are basically modeling themselves very largely on what this show
did. I don't want to wait.
Oh, interesting. Well, now Alan's going to have to pay if you go beyond two bars.
All right. I didn't.
We're at fair use so far, I think. So before we get to the finale, in an alternate universe where either of you could have your pick of any character on the show, you're at any age, whatever it needs to be in order to play it, who would each of you like to play?
Oh, I would definitely want to play Angela. Not because it's the lead, but just because the character's so interesting and she gets to wear cool clothes.
I guess I'd play the mom.
Oh my God.
It's kind of slim pickings. Jordan Catalano.
I know you would play Ricky, the bisexual eyeliner wearing kid.
That's where we're going to land on.
Yeah, like what are you even trying to?
Yeah, Ricky.
All right, and can you think of a character that either of your co-stars from past shows would be really good playing?
Well, Eric McCormack would have been good as Graham.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he would.
I would laugh so hard to see Adam Scott as Jordan Catalano. See Adam Scott leaning against his locker.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
That's
and
his
so
bag.
True. His like the indie movies that he used to do. Like I used to always tease him when he said like he got a new job. I was like, oh, are you gonna fuck a girl up against a wall in this one? Because he's always fucking somebody up against a wall. That was like his signature.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's true. Go back and watch.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, so now it is time. We've seen the first episode. We're going to jump not too far in the calendar, but we're going to go 18 episodes forward to watch the finale. You guys ready?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, cute. So the bisexual guy now apparently is going to maybe
Tony,
like a girl.
I did not. Mm-hmm.
All right, well, it's 1994.
Shursky gave me your number.
And he is bisexual.
Okay, she got it from Howard Pickett at the last reunion.
Oh, no.
Ew.
Because I
Mom's
already told you.
Really landing on thick with somebody over the phone. Like in a flirt.
I think it's
flirting.
The same. I think it's Tony Keller, who she had a dream about.
Yeah.
Oh, God, don't sneak up.
I created my own prison, and I have to exist in it.
Yeah, stuck the landing.
Yeah, he did a great job, and it's all because of Brian.
It's Cyrano.
The man behind that, right, yeah.
A.K.A. Roxanne.
I love Roxanne.
That's great. I feel bad because I said he was so stupid, but they revealed here that he has a learning disability.
Uh-oh.
You can't? I forgot. I'm late for homeroom.
You know, like, oh, no, he's going to try to. Well, he said he was bi, but maybe he just said that because he couldn't say he was gay.
Maybe. It must be.
But now he's going to try to have a girlfriend, which is sort of crazy. This is a crazy plot line. It's deep.
Right?
Yeah.
He's gay. He just said it. Oh, that happened to me in college.
If I were attracted to girls.
Aw.
Nice going, Ricky.
But the thing you didn't realize is you're wrong.
Busted.
You always wear this much makeup.
Come on in, Jordan. Do you want a sandwich?
Like, I'm so sure you would say that to somebody's mom. Do you always wear this much makeup?
This was a person who
cracked a second
so
half gallon.
When he was 17.
Maybe you can write a letter, but can you lean?
Maybe that's why this show didn't get picked up.
Yeah. Oh, that's
Ooh,
it.
Ooh, good one. So that was really good. I mean, I feel like the pilot was tonally just a little different because I think they were trying to probably be a little more, even though it was unconventional, they were trying to be a little more conventional just so they could like get picked up. And then I feel like by the finale, there's a lot more kind of honesty and really unusual subject matter and things being addressed that you hadn't seen.
Yeah.
All right. So what happened in the finale for those who did not just watch it with us?
Okay. Wow.
All right. Well, apparently over the season, her friendship has been torn asunder, not only with Angela, but with Ricky as well. Also, Angela seems to have had some advancement in her relationship with Jordan Catalano, and then he messed up.
Both of those things are things I accurately predicted.
Totally. You know what you're doing. And you probably correctly called it that maybe they're related to one another, that they got in trouble with Angela together through some sort of misbehavior.
That Jordan and Rayanne might have like had a thing while he was supposed to be dating Angela. Right?
That's a good guess, I think. So, you know, she seems much more self-possessed. She is not, like, flitting from friendship to friendship.
Well, it's interesting because she's only a few months older than when they shot the pilot, but she seems much older, and she was only 13. So it's, again, she's really good actress.
She actually is much older. They filmed the pilot off-cycle, and so it aired the next year. So by the time of the finale, she's 15.
Oh, wow.
Oh, good.
Okay, well, that explains the kissing. So we thought that Tom Irwin might have been having an affair with somebody, and he's a chef, and he has a restaurant, and he's trying to get backers, and so he has to kind of compromise himself slightly and cook a dinner for these, you know, rich people. And meanwhile, his partner in the restaurant
is lamb chops.
A very attractive woman, and Hallie, and it seems very platonic. Meanwhile, the mother, Patty, Angela's mother, Patty, she's had a dream about her high school boyfriend, like the one that got away kind of thing. And she's like all crushed out over this guy. And she even goes so far as to tell her two young daughters that she's still got the hots for this guy and shows them his yearbook photo. So he's supposed to come over one night to see her about some like supposed like business thing. And then conveniently her husband and both daughters are not home. So she's all excited and she's gotten all dolled up, and at the last minute he doesn't show. Cut to the triumphant dinner that Graham has cooked for the backers. That's all gone great. The restaurant's gonna happen. They're all excited and congratulating each other, and they throw their arms around each other, and it looks like they're gonna start making out. But at the last second he is like, oh, I gotta go home, and he pulls away, and it seems like maybe he's gonna have integrity,
which is nice. I'm gonna hazard a guess that because of the conversation after the Tony guy doesn't show up, she is surprised at the door by Jordan Catalano, who she serves from between 3 and 4 gallons of milk, one glass at a time. While having a conversation, she sort of, I think, helps encourage him about...
Yeah, but we skipped that whole plot line, so we needed to recap that. So meanwhile, Jordan Catalano has apparently been in some kind of, you know, romantic relationship with Angela. She's gotten her wish, and then he's done her wrong somehow, and we're kind of assuming, we're guessing that he maybe fooled around with Rayanne. Angela seems bitter. Rayanne seems like guilty and sorry and weird. Jordan Catalano tries to talk to Angela, but he can't you know, she's like a stone wall. So he is being tutored by sweet Brian, the lovelorn, curly-haired friend of Angela's. And so even though Brian is madly in love with Angela, he tells Jordan what to say to get Angela to forgive him. And she is like, oh, that's... And she starts to break down a little bit, but then...
Oh, you've said the right things.
Yeah, so then that's not quite enough. Like, she's not, like, back in for sure yet. So, you know, the idea of Jordan writing her a letter comes up, but of course Jordan isn't equipped to do that because he's shy and awkward. Of course, this cool guy is really just very vulnerable deep down.
Yeah.
Oh, Jordan has a learning disability. Oh, okay. I missed that when you said that.
He said that early.
So he couldn't write a letter, right?
Yeah. It was part of why he was getting tutoring, because he was like a rudimentary reader with some sort of like disability.
Oh, okay.
He said, there's a term for me.
But meanwhile, Brian ends up writing the letter for him, and it's gorgeous and beautiful, and she's completely like swept away by it. And then Brian's devastated because now she's back together with Jordan, and Brian loves her too, and he's the one who's responsible for this. So everybody's in a pickle, and it's just like, you know, Cyrano de Bergerac or the movie Roxanne, which is what Nick said. It's exactly that same plot line. So then Ricky inadvertently kind of blurts out that Brian wrote the letter, and she's suddenly seeing Brian in a very new light, and he's looking a little bit better than he did before she found out he wrote the letter. So now she's torn between two lovers, and there's Brian and there's Jordan, and that's the end of the pilot. But Nick, you need to talk about the Ricky storyline, because that's really amazing.
The Ricky storyline is great. We know from the pilot that he tells people that he's bi, and like much is made of that in Angela's household. He's bi, what? You know, by the finale, there's the cute character Delia, who apparently showed up over the season, and she enthusiastically and very cutely wants to befriend Ricky. She wants to get involved, and that kind of comes to a head. He's very flattered by her attentions, and he tells in his friendship with Brian Krakow, he says, this is kind of thrilling and terrifying because this might be my chance to be straight if this works, which is kind of like,
that's
whoa,
so sad.
What? Well, that's a crazy thing to say. Yeah. I thought you were bi.
Mm.
That's the resolution is when he asks her out and he's like, hey, we should go out sometime. And she says, you know, that would be great. You're gay, right? Suddenly it's on the table. And he says, yeah, I just usually don't say it like that. I've never said it before. So it turns out he was gay all along. He wasn't bi, but he was trying to soften the blow of society.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderfully brave moment and generous on her part to say, well, I have a huge crush on you. I think you're an amazing person. I think you're a great dancer. It's a wonderfully charismatic rendering of those two characters in sort of the depths of red states and conservative households. It's a very gentle way of saying, look, these really likable human beings, they can like people of the same sex and still be really great people.
So hearing you guys talk as we were watching the finale, you both seem more enthusiastic about the show this time than when you watched the pilot. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Even all the acting just in general seemed a lot better. I think everybody took a cue from Claire Danes.
That's how it goes 99% of the time, where the pilot has a clunky feeling to it, whether it's a good pilot or a lousy pilot. It's, you know, a baby bird coming out of its shell and like stretching its wings and finding its feet. I was definitely drawn in by the drama of where things had landed with the characters.
Now, not having seen any of the episodes in between and not knowing exactly what went down with different people, like, did you find yourselves rooting for Angela to wind up with Jordan Catalano or with Brian under the circumstance?
Well, I think it's good because you kind of like both of them. I mean, that's what's good about the Jordan Catalano character is obviously you're supposed to be rooting for Brian, but Jordan Catalano has become now very earnest and sympathetic. So I think that's better if it's not a clear choice.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't know which way to vote based on the finale. I mean, it's funny. I was a football player in high school. I think I had elements of both characters, Jordan and Brian Krakow, although I wasn't as smart as him. But
you really looked exactly like Jared Leto.
I wouldn't go that far. But I like if he worked out a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. If he was a little more buff.
Jared Leto with better abs. Yeah.
With if he'd had slightly higher cheekbones.
But I mean, like most people, I think, you know, we're trained to root for the Krakow in that circumstance. You know, you don't want the fake in Cyrano to get the girl. You want Cyrano. You want the originator of the
language and the sentiment. Yeah, it definitely seems like ultimately she would have been with Brian, but I like the fact that it's more ambiguous.
Yeah, I agree. I like that they didn't make him a doofus, that you're like, oh, he's making a legitimate play for it as well.
And like, because the show ends here, you know, I mean, she gets in the car with Jordan. That's the end. There is no more My So-Called Life. How do you feel about that as a closing note for that story?
That's terrible. I mean, I definitely would have watched a season two of that. I mean, that's such a great ending, and it was done very well.
Yeah.
It's too bad. I mean, the parents' storyline wrapped up. Ricky's storyline wrapped up. Ryan looks like ultimately she's going to get back into the group, or she's going to get back into Angela's good graces, because now she's got Sharon to, like,
maybe she and Sharon run interference become for a couple.
Oh my gosh. And this is all just what you would like. And then, you know, the storyline that's left undone, the cliffhanger, is Angela, which is great.
Now, you both seemed really taken with the Ricky story, as I was just watching it again. Like, after Claire Danes' performance, I think the biggest legacy of the show is what the writers and Wilson Cruz did with that character.
Yeah.
For, like, 1994-95, Wilson was out. Ricky comes out at the end. He says, "I'm gay," which I'm not sure those specific words had been said before by a character, at least in a long time on TV.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah, he might have been the first to say that. He's so good, too. The actor they cast is so good.
Yeah, I agree. And
touching.
And to do that with such a young, you know, sort of fragile character, like, you know, a child, a high school kid.
Is
really
right.
Gutsy.
Yes, that's good. That would have been good for our parents and a lot of people. Would have been great for them to see that.
Yeah. One of the things we always like to do on the podcast is to try to fill in some of the blanks in between in an unusual way, which is I'm going to ask you some multiple choice questions about events from the episodes you have not seen, and you're going to try to have to guess what it is that the answer is. Okay, you ready?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first one is a big one. You've made some guesses. Let's see if you're right. Why exactly is Angela mad at both Jordan Catalano and Rayanne in the finale? Is it A, they made fun of her behind her back, B, they cheated off her on a test, or C, they slept together?
C.
Let's see clip number one, find out if you're right.
You would not believe the number Sharon Chersky just pulled on me.
Like what?
Oh, like how Rayanne supposedly did it. With Jordan.
Ricky knows the truth.
Ricky always knows all
Poor
the
Ricky.
Dirt.
He does.
Like,
I mean, I honestly believe she was past all this. I think she was over her jealousy.
The truth teller.
Ricky.
All right, one for one.
I will say, in fairness to Jordan, it's still a terrible thing he does. He and Angela, in sort of very mid-90s network TV fashion, were on a break at the time. In the finale, Jordan says his band has a new name, which I believe was Residue. Mm-hmm. What was the band's previous name? Was it A, Frozen Embryos, B, Sperm Donors with a Z, or C, Pizza Party?
Frozen Embryos.
Frozen Embryos.
You are correct. It's Frozen Embryos. Two for two.
Boom.
Future rock star Jared Leto.
Come on. It's pretty irresistible. I mean, you know, I think all of our pulses just raced a little bit.
Yeah.
How can Brian Krakow compete with that? I don't know.
No,
it just doesn't seem fair to me.
No.
All right. Speaking of music, in the Christmas episode, Ricky is kicked out of his house, and he winds up befriending a homeless woman who may be his guardian angel. She is played by which 90s rock musician? A, Alanis Morissette, B, Courtney Love, or C, Juliana Hatfield?
I'm going with Hatfield. I'm going whole Courtney Love.
All right, let's find out which of you is right.
Yeah, I think that's Juliana Hatfield. Yeah. Because she was so indie grunge and also easier to get.
So Megan is 3 for 3. Nick, you're only 2 for 3.
Welcome to my life.
All right, I got two more. How does Delia's crush on Ricky first manifest itself? A, he helps her pick up her books in the hallway. B, he helps her cut loose at a school dance. Or C, he stands up to bullies in the bleachers at a school football game.
He helps her cut loose at a school dance because she said something about, I love what a great dancer you are.
Yeah, I'll agree with Megan.
All right, let's look at clip 4.
Looks like a school dance.
It is.
Oh my God.
Wow.
This is so my part.
It really is. God, you were born to play.
I rock
Ricky.
A vest like nobody's business.
Yeah.
All right, so finally, all right, Nick, your only chance to catch up, you got to give a different answer than her on the last question.
Oh, boy.
All right. In the Halloween episode, which character dresses up as Angela for their costume? A, Sharon. B, Angela's little sister, Danielle. C, Ricky. Or D, Jordan Catalano.
Oof.
Her little sister, I think.
All right. I'm gonna go with Ricky.
All right, we got a photo. Let's take a look.
Oh, Danielle.
Little sister Danielle. Always ignored. It's a running gag on the show that no one ever pays attention to her, and so she finally decides to try dressing up as Angela.
That's what I figured. The little sister complex.
I'm always happy to be defeated by Megan Mullally.
Megan did great on that quiz, so let's cut Nick a break and give you a chance to answer a bonus question. While we're on the subject of the My So-Called Life Halloween episode, Danielle was not the only character who dressed up like someone else on the show that day. Who did Ricky dress up as? Was it A, Jordan Catalano, B, Brian Krakow, or C, Rayanne Graff? Think you know the answer? Let's see if you're right with help from my Google assistant. Hey Google, on My So-Called Life, who did Ricky dress up as for Halloween?
On the website thiswastv.com, they say, following the theme of being someone you're not, two characters dress as people in their lives. Danielle does an amazing Angela with red hair, plaid shirt, and awkward body hugging, while Ricky plays normal and dresses as Brian.
You heard it. Ricky wanted to try seeming normal for the day, so he dressed as the most normal, boring person he knew, Brian. Thanks, Google. And now, back to our show. All right, so guys, was this a good way to experience the show?
I love that. It was really fun. Yeah, I loved it.
It was really fun.
It kind of makes me wish I'd watched it the first time around. But yeah, it was really, since I didn't, this is the next best thing, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a great Reader's Digest version.
Well, sometimes we've had guests who say, all right, well, I feel like I got my fill from this. And some of them have said, I'm going to go back and watch more. Sophia Bush, we watched Parks and Rec. And as soon as we finished the finale, she's like, all right, I know what I'm doing for the rest of my Friday.
Oh, nice.
So, like, could you guys see yourselves going back and watching more? Or do you think you've had My So-Called Life experience already?
Well, I kind of feel like I would because it seems good. But then I also sort of feel like my TV list is as long as my leg. So I probably won't in reality. But, I mean, it seems really good, you know.
The desire is there, but... I'm hearing about people, especially during the quarantine, doing rewatches of series like The Sopranos or 6 Feet Under. And while that sounds wonderful, as you mentioned at the top of the podcast, there's so much good stuff. We can't even see all the new good stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. I remember I was reading you one time doing like a year-end wrap-up, and you said, I get paid to watch TV full-time, and there's no way I can remotely watch all the good shows.
Yeah.
Then when it comes to like awards and things like that, even the critics are saying no one can possibly watch all of this. So here's our best guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really hard. And, you know, one of the very few silver linings of all of this is I'm going to have a little bit more time to catch up on stuff. But there's so much TV right now. Thank you so much for coming.
Oh,
this was fantastic.
It was
I
so
really
fun.
Appreciate it.
So fun. I'm a big fan of yours, and so is Nick. Thanks for having us on.
It's my absolute pleasure. For those of you at home, thank you for tuning in to Rolling Stone and OBB Sounds Too Long Didn't Watch, presented by Google Assistant. I'm Alan Sepinwall. Until next time, I just like how you're always leaning against stuff.
Hey, duh squared.
It was so fun.
Thank you.
Thanks again for listening. If you enjoyed the foolishness you just heard, We'd like to ask you to do the same things that all podcasts ask you for. Please like, subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcasting platform, and please spread the word to anyone else you know who might enjoy it too. This has been OBB Sound and Rolling Stone's Too Long Didn't Watch, brought to you by Google Assistant and hosted by me, Alan Sepinwall. Executive produced by Michael D. Ratner, Scott Ratner, Elias Tanner, and Alyssa Walker of OBB Sound, a division of OBB Media, and Gus Winter of Rolling Stone. Co-executive produced by Arlen Konopacki and Grace Delia of OBB Sound, and Bridget Chelsea and Maria Fontora of Rolling Stone. The production was engineered by Evan Menick and Daniel Wanacott, edited, mixed, and mastered by Michael Capuano, sound designed by Michael Capuano, original music by Daniel Wanacott. Production assistants were Jennifer Spotts and Raquel Dominguez.